So as you, I think from today, today there still is a introduction to guide to meditation class on the other hall. Is that the case? Pauline is doing it, good. So those who have come for the introduction to meditation class, that's in the hall to my right here. As you go out of this hall here, you turn right. So I'll just go to that now. No. It's wonderful to have classes for the different people, some who just come here just to learn the basics and some who go deep into meditation. And the basics of meditation are pretty simple, and they're teaching you just to learn how to calm the mind down. Not so much to focus, because focus can make it more tense. Not to try and do something, because that leads to frustration and disappointment. You will always find there's always something more to do, and the more energy you put into these things, the more desire you put into these things, the more actually tense you get. It's something which I remember reading how the Buddha explained things, how he taught. He used to say that the definition of suffering is being separated from where you want to be. You are here, you want to be somewhere else, and that is a tightness, a tension. And the only way to create peace and stillness in this mind is to develop a sense of contentment and satisfaction in this moment, where you don't have to do anything, you don't need to go anywhere. And we have many, many similes for this, and major similes. Notice something which is not just Buddhist, it's about the many, many cultures, looking at the human mind and comparing it to a body of water, a river or a lake or something. And that lake, you know, your goal is to keep it nice and still, and there's waves on the surface. And you might sort of look at those waves on the surface and with your hand try and smooth them all out. You know, with the peaks of the waves or the ripples, try and pat them down. And that, of course, what happens is you just create more waves. You're disturbing that water. But then if you do nothing, then those waves continue. So what is the solution? And the solution is to try and find out the cause for those waves, for that disturbance. Why is it disturbed? And once you find out its cause, then you delete or take care of the cause so it's not being disturbed anymore, and then the water becomes still. It's like it's all by itself. But it's not really all by itself. It's you're just taking out the causes. Why does your mind not be able to become still and peaceful? And there's so many experiences of that, that sometimes you may be in a place it's too hot or it's too cold, it's too uncomfortable or it's too noisy. And all of those times when you want to be somewhere else, that is what causes you an inability to be peaceful, to be still. And you know, in my life, many times I've been in situations which have been unpleasant, which have, I keep on going back to this, but the time when I did have a very heavy fever, having a scrub typhus in the hospital, I've been about 2 or 3 weeks in there with zero energy, and deciding just to, you know, in the hospital bed, and this was, you know, almost 40 years ago, it was unpleasant, very basic facilities. Just deciding I'd had enough of just fighting this disease, I'd make peace with it, become very calm with it, allow it to be, and getting into a very nice deep state of meditation, which actually surprised me at the time. And found out that even if you have a fever and you're really sick, zero energy almost, that you can still get into still, peaceful type of meditation. That showed me you don't have to have it just this way. You can be really sick, you know, hospital bound and with drips in your arms, and you still can get into deep meditation. It was a fantastic thing to know that it's possible. How is that possible? It's because nevertheless, you can always make peace with where you are. It's wanting to be somewhere else was the problem. and when you don't want anything in the whole world, you may be uncomfortable. Okay, this is the best I can get, this is good enough. Then you can actually develop this sense of contentment and easily satisfied. I mean, really easily satisfied. And when you get to that degree of skill in your perceptions, it's not just getting real satisfaction. What other people would say was not satisfying at all, impossible to be at peace. But you decide, I'm going to just make peace with this. It's noisy, but I'm not going to fight it. It's painful, but I'm going to be with it. It's uncomfortable, but that's life. And that means you can let it be. That word, let it be, doesn't make it perfect, first of all, then you let it be. As it is right now, however it is, you know, the warts, disturbances and all, you let it be. And it's wonderful when you have the courage to be able to do that. You know it's possible, it can be done, especially if you've done it before, and you can be in a really noisy place. And there's a couple of noisy places which I've been in. No, this place, not a Mara, it's not noisy at all. My cave where I live is not noisy, but I've been in some places which have been... I remember just meditating in front of Hay Street Mall in Perth, opposite a time zone. You know the time zone is all sorts of rock music, I think, I don't know what it was, blaring out on the opposite side of the road, opposite the Wesley Church. The Burmese community were doing some demonstration. And all they wanted me to sit there for 2 hours, just as making a silent protest. And sitting there just on the, no chairs or cushions or anything. In those days I was thin, so I didn't have natural upholstery in those days. So it was basically uncomfortable, sitting on the pavement, noise just blaring out from opposite the street. The cars going past didn't really matter. The noise was coming from these shops. And anyway, still being able to get into a nice, peaceful meditation. It's possible. And so how do you do that? Is you don't try and cure the problem, get rid of it, make it better. You learn how to accept it and care for it. And it's amazing what you can make peace with. That was the reason I was saying this. You can make peace with almost anything. When you learn how to make peace with such things and care for almost anything, then you find the opportunity to actually to start your meditation anywhere. You try your very best to get a nice, comfortable body, but it doesn't have to be perfect. You are easily satisfied. And when you're not so demanding of everything being so perfect, then you find you don't need to control very much. It's good enough. And when it's good enough, what happens then? You don't need to do anything. You're not disturbing the body of water. You're not sort of agitating the mind. You're not wanting the mind to do anything else. I know people keep complaining, said, well, it may be okay for you, Ajahn Brahm. You've been meditating for years. You know, you're probably born sort of cross-legged from your mother's womb. That wasn't true. Although I do remember one lady here. Years ago, she told me this story. It freaked her out. She was still in hospital in the maternity ward. She'd just given birth to her kid. I can't remember who it was. I would love to find out who that kid was and how it developed. But the kid just finished breastfeeding. You know, it's just 2 or 3 days old, that's all. And you know, the mum was lying on her back, finished breastfeeding the kid, and the kid just crawled to the mummy's sort of abdomen and then crossed its legs in full lotus, put its hands on mummy's belly and started meditating. It would freak anybody out. But maybe because she was meditating when she was pregnant. But nevertheless, the kid would do that after it had eaten, decided to meditate on the belly. It was really quite phenomenal. But it does mean that even if you're a kid, that's going a bit far, a baby, just freshly born, it's amazing what beings can do. And how do you do that? You learn how to enjoy the contentment, being at peace, easily satisfied, not demanding anything at all in the world. That is actually how we meditate. And so that means that you see what causes those disturbances in your mind. Even like thoughts, what causes thoughts? Why do you think? And it's not sort of a natural thing which people have to do all the time. If people were really aware, they would notice quite often they don't think. There are times when you're just listening to some great music. I used to know this when I used to listen to classical music especially. I noticed, why was this so enjoyable? And I realized, and this was afterwards, when I was listening to some classical music, I wasn't thinking. Because if I thought, if an idea came into my mind, it would be like me sitting in the auditorium when it was being played live and saying to my friend, oh, that's really good, wasn't it? If I said something like that in a recitation of a beautiful music, I'd be kicked out of the theatre for disturbing everybody. And the classical music, every note was you had to pay attention to. And that meant that I couldn't think. Afterwards I did, but not during the performance. And many other times in life you don't think. Very often when you are seeing a beautiful sunset or going down to the ocean, seeing some beautiful parts of nature, you're not thinking. Because the natural phenomena just satisfies you profoundly. And I also notice that when I'm, believe it or not, when I give a talk, I mentioned this last night, when I give a talk, I mostly don't think. Just allow the words to come out. It's all about letting it be, allowing it to happen, just peacefully, silently experiencing this world. And you experience much more of it when you don't give comments, or you don't try and capture things, or you don't try and work it all out, what it means. You just gather the data, that's all. And so this way you find out you become more and more peaceful, more and more blissed out, and more aware. And that's what we do with meditation. The lake gets really still. It's peaceful. And once you start getting enough peace built up in the mind, it's one of the reasons why in the meditations I teach here, just you relax the body. It's pretty easy to understand what relaxing the body is like, but what does it feel like? It feels pleasurable. It's not sort of a nothing feeling, a dull feeling. It's the body feels really delightful. You look at it and it's it gives you a sense of you're very happy just to be here. And that happiness is an important part of the meditation. It's what supplies the satisfaction. Because if you weren't satisfied with how your body feels, you'd have to scratch this, move that, cough this. You do something because the body is not at peace. And it, you extend that from the body being at peace again to the mind being at peace. When you're satisfied, there's no work to do in your mind. You don't need to plan for anything. You don't need to think. You don't need to make a decision. The mind can be still. It can take a break. It can relax. It's like your brain is like a government. Always makes silly decisions, but it's like a government. It has to make decisions. And you argue about which is the right decision, which is the wrong decision. And sometimes that causes a lot of thinking, especially when you think, or you have the idea you have to make a decision. That's one of the things as a senior monk with responsibility that I realize that quite often in my life I have to be irresponsible. In other words, I don't think I'm not going to make a decision. There's lots of other monks in my monastery, lots of other people in my committee will actually make the decision for me. Sometimes it's a good decision, sometimes it's a wrong decision, but otherwise, it doesn't matter. They make the decision and I'm nice and peaceful with it. It's not that bad. What happens is you have a much more peaceful life and you're a monk who's supposed to be like this as a monk, who doesn't get so involved. So this is how we learn how to not get involved. In other words, when you meditate, you've got no business. You're not working. When I meditate, I'm not the spiritual director of the Buddhist Society of West Australia. I'm not the teacher, I'm not the abbot. I'm a nobody. You don't do anything. You're not trying to make decisions. You're not trying to find solutions. You're not trying to cure anything. You're caring for it. A couple of doctors came from Adelaide last night talking to me, and they were saying, they're junior doctors just starting out, and just how important that little teaching was. As a doctor, as any person in those therapeutic professions, your job is not to cure people, it's to care for them. And they were just doing that and finding it so much more delightful being a medical practitioner when you make caring the most important. It's so much better and get better results with your patients, your clients, when caring is more important than getting rid of these things which people go to hospital for. Disease is this, or broken leg here, care for it. The leg will usually cure itself once it's set right. Your job is just to care for it so it doesn't get further harm. And that's like your mind as well. Care for your mind. Please don't try curing it. And so when we do this, we find the waves on the lake get less and less and less. And as the Buddha taught it, it's very rarely I give that this form of the simile. As the Buddha taught it, when the waves are settled down, when they're all settled down and the lake is perfectly still, if you look directly above it, you can see all the fish, the other animals swimming in that lake. If there's waves, it all gets distorted. And if that lake is really still, you can actually see from the top right to the very bottom and see everything which is there. It's nice and clear. And so this is where we learn just how to get the insight to the clarity of mind. So this is where we learn how to make the mind peaceful and how to allow it to open itself up so we can see what's going on inside. And when we do this, this is where we learn about what meditation is. Learning just, instead of having stage one and stage two, it doesn't work because you're trying to do things. You're agitating your own mind. When you learn how to let go more, you find that the mind does become very, very peaceful by itself. And all those people which I've known have deep meditations, they all do that by just finding the causes for things like thinking, settling those causes down so they don't need to do any business, letting go of past and future where most business lies, being in this moment and making peace with this moment, learning how to be satisfied with it. You may be cold, may be hot, you may be sick, you may be tired, you may be over energetic. Make peace with it, let it be, don't fight it. And then after a while you get very skilled in just really letting it be, not just playing around at this, and not really wanting anything. Then the mind gets very still and peaceful. You'd be surprised just how easy meditation is. I say that carefully because people say, Ajahn Brahm, you must be crazy. Meditation isn't peaceful. Isn't easy, sorry. When you know how it works, it's very easy. Just have to let go. Let go means allow it to happen. Don't get in the way. You disappear. You vanish. And the more you can disappear and vanish, the more you stop fighting this moment, the more peaceful and deep it becomes. Okay. Anyway, that's me talking to begin with. Sometimes the reason you talk, I talk for 15 minutes before the meditation begins, is to give some reminders, but also to speak quietly so that when we, the first 15 minutes, it's like a meditation calming you down. You're listening to me instead of thinking about your thoughts, which means that you're paying attention, I hope, and that means your thoughts are calming down. So you're starting the meditation ahead. Okay, so let's start now. So you're pretty much sitting in your meditation posture. If you want to adjust it in any which way, please do so. Move this leg, move your bottom, get your hands in place, or whatever, and then we can start our meditation. So here we go. So close your eyes. Yes. With your eyes closed, awareness on your body. Feeling your body with your mind. And the longer you have the intention to be aware of your body, then the more sensitive that mindfulness becomes. It's growing the power of mindfulness. All of these mental powers, they're like fires. They start off with a little flame, and you put more kindling on that little fire, bigger pieces of wood, until you have like a self-sustaining, strong source of light. And that's what I'm doing now with my mindfulness, putting on my feet first of all. Just getting to be sensitive to them, not missing anything. And as I say every week, adding the kindness. This kindness is caring. Is looking at something and not just looking at it with sort of carelessness. I'm really concerned about you. Feet, you know, may you be happy. What can I do for you to make you more comfortable? And sometimes just that attitude is sufficient to calm everything down. And it happens every week. Feel the feet, wish them kindness. And they start to, well, for me anyway, it's like a tingling feeling. It's like the same feeling that when I used to soak my feet in hot water after coming home from school on a cold, snowy day in London. They'd rest, relax, they'll feel good. And that delight of relaxation, I just continue scanning my body up past my ankles, my calves and my knees. I don't go up too fast. As I scan those parts of my body, I know that, you know, that particular part has been kind of completed. When I can feel that delight, I recognize it. This is the body saying, yes, I'm ready to meditate. Relaxation is delightful. Tension is, that stress is quite painful. Go past the knees. And sometimes, maybe I've been sitting for too long, the knees can get a bit sore. But when I really need to, I can just look at those knees. Lots of mindfulness, lots of care. And you can relax the feelings. However it feels like to you, however you describe it, you can always make it less painful, more relaxed. The Buddha said there's two types of thorns get into the body, the mental and the physical, whenever you feel any pain. The physical is just part of having a body. You'll always have some discomfort and pain. But the mental, the reaction which you have to it, the emotional response, that's something which you can do so much about. You can let it be. And most of the pain, discomfort vanishes. And you go up the thighs. to the butt, to the waist. As I'm going through the body, I don't mind moving. I'm going to adjust my waist and the back on top of it to make the body feel more comfortable. A nice little stretch, I always do now. And I don't forget the other parts of my back, making sure everything is in a good position, feels strong and ready to go in meditation. And then go back down to that waist and go up the body inside, digestive tract, stomach, lungs. I can feel my lungs now. Just relaxing them. I'm not exercising, not walking or anything, so my body doesn't need so much oxygen. So my lungs can breathe in and out softly. And then I just notice anything else which is going up there in the heart or any of the organs in my back, livers and kidneys. And if ever there is any tightness there, just imagine that tightness and stop squashing it. Imagine it expanding. Imagine not pulling at things, leaving things to be relaxed. It's usually their nature to be relaxed, but sometimes I tense up around it. And that's where I put my attention and my kindness. I'm not tensing up around anything. The body becomes loose and easy and relaxed. And my shoulders, I always feel tense at this time of the meditation, so I deliberately tensing up more and then let go. And then they get more relaxed than when I started. And then allow that mindfulness to go down the arms. There's hardly ever any problems for me there until I get to my wrists and hands, and I make sure those hands are putting in a good position and the fingers feel comfortable. If I didn't get those fingers comfortable right now in this beginning part of meditation, I'd find I'd be fidgeting with them later on. You get comfort now and these parts of the body become satisfied. They're content. So they don't demand your attention. They don't need to be adjusted. Which means those parts of the bodies get still and disappear. And I go back up to my neck. Again, that feels a little bit tight in the back. My head is not well balanced on top of the neck. So just find the best position for my head on top of the neck, which I know will mean that any tightness in the neck will disappear. And then I go to the front of the face, relaxing the muscles around the eyes and the nose and the mouth. Everything feels at peace, at ease. I don't do this too quickly. Make sure that I've got to pretty much the maximum level of facial relaxation. And then I can feel the whole body sitting here, instead of in parts, now just as a whole. If I notice anything which is not quite relaxed, My back is a little bit tense. So I'm going to put some energy there, some kindness. Be with any of those feelings. And after a little while, they ease off. And now I come to some of the fun parts of the meditation. I feel the whole body. And it's calm. It's not perfect. But it's more relaxed than when I started. And I notice that. And that brings up the experience of delight, of pleasure, a relaxed body. If you can't do that, never mind. You find you are more relaxed than when you started, that's good enough. But if you can experience the pleasure of relaxation, you may notice that the relaxation deepens. That's what the pleasure does, it gives you satisfaction. It allows you to let go of the body more. And then once the body's relaxed, I can leave it alone. It's like parking your car, making sure everything is correct and right and secure, so you can walk away from it for half an hour or more, not being concerned about its safety. Now you walk away from your body, metaphorically, and go to your mind. And I have found the most useful way to go from the body to the mind is actually the how peaceful are you? Peace is something you can easily notice. And you realize how peaceful you are, or how agitated. Give it a number from 1 to 10, 1 really peaceful, 10 agitated. It's only a skillful means, you don't have to do it. But it makes you more aware of this thing we call peace, which is part of your mind. It's a way of getting aware of one of the most important parts of your mind. It's peace or agitation. And as I said earlier, it's like looking at the lake. The degree of peace is the degree of stillness on the surface of the lake. How many waves are there? How high and how fast are they moving? And you will never be able to calm those waves down by putting your hand in the lake and smoothing out the surface. Instead, you know the cause of that lack of peace. You learn how to let go of the past and the future. And the way to let go of past and the future is to be kind, to care for both of them. You can't fix up any mistakes of the past. Don't be judgmental of the past. You don't deserve that burden. And that kindness softens the past. It allows you to let it go with more ease. And the future. Be kind to the future. Give it the best possible spin. Because now is where your future is being made. And in this present moment, be kind to this moment too. Don't be so demanding, so fault-finding. You can never find any satisfaction in this moment. Kindness means you can find satisfaction in almost anything. So I'm being kind to this moment. This moment feels delightful. And it stays. is peaceful. I don't need to think or plan, so I'm too enjoying being here. The mind only wanders off if you're not happy where you already are. And once I'm in this moment, peaceful, I don't need to say very much. The stillness and the peace get ever more delightful. And they'll take me into some wonderful meditations. So I'll now be quiet until just before the meditation ends. is getting close now to the end of this meditation period. How peaceful was your mind? Was it peaceful enough to stand over it in this metaphor? See, like standing over a still lake, all the animals which live inside it, and how your mind works. And see, sometimes the bottom of the lake, right through it. And does peace feel delightful, pleasurable? And as we come out of the mind into our body, how does your body feel? Sitting still, the body can get so relaxed. The healing can happen when you're just watching your mind. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times, as usual. On the 3rd ringing of the gong, may come out of meditation. The first ringing was not that good, so this is the 3rd. Excellent. So now we have opportunity for questions, those who want to ask. Anyone on the floor here would like to ask a question? Yeah, John. Yeah.
Basic meditation. You talk about staying in the present moment for long periods of time and don't even sort of like go into the breath, as I understand it. Could you talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, just stay in the present moment for long periods of time. That's like a basic. You're not enough into the future or the past. And even just so in the present moment that you can't have any desire or wanting. And often the things like the breath just come up by themselves. You look back upon your meditation, you don't decide, I'm now going to watch the breath, which means in the future. You just, what are you doing now? You're so still and so peaceful. And that's joyful. And that usually, you ask my meditation, that usually turns into nimittas. Even just bypassing the breath. There's a little simile I gave years ago, that we do have, like the Buddha gave, stages of meditation. That's just like you get a piece of wood from the shop, you've got to make a shelf out of it. And sometimes if you get it out of an ordinary wood shop, you have to plane it, saw it to the right size, plane it again, and then you sandpaper it, and you polish it. But nowadays, you can get pieces of wood from the Bunnings, and they're so smooth already. Just only fine sandpaper is all you need. So if your mind is very peaceful and still, it does not need all these other stage 1, stage 2, stage 3 of meditation, it's already there. And the main point is it's peaceful, you're aware, you have joy, you have this kindness, the kindfulness. So, yeah, there is, even like in the Anapanasati Sutta, I often mention this, the first two stages of Anapanasati is being aware of the breath going in and going out, short breath and then long breath. You don't have to do one and then the other. It's a problem I had. I said, how short does it have to be? What's a long breath? And I found that quite often, naturally, my breath was somewhere in the middle. Where does that count? What it really meant is you're aware of the breath, and just to make it a little bit more interesting, you know, just its length, short or long, or in between, very short, very long, or whatever. And that's enough. It was not you had to do it, stage one, then stage two. It was just a helping in the beginning to get your awareness of the breath. I mean, of course, knowing the whole body of the breath, I don't know why anybody would ever doubt this, because the Buddha says it, the body, the breath is one of the bodies, he said in the sutta. So it's just seeing the beginning of the breath right at the very end. Beginning of the in, out breath from the very beginning to the very end. Not just in, out, the whole of it. That happens naturally. As the mindfulness increases, your awareness can see more. And calming down, that happens naturally. And the joy coming up, which is the fifth, sixth, seventh stage of the Anapanasati. That's why I, even with the breath, to make sure you can accept the perception of joy. It's a pleasant thing to do, it's very satisfying. And of course the ninth stage of Anapanasati is when nimittas start to appear. So, you may not have explained it exactly the same way the Buddha explained it, but it fulfills everything. It's a much more simple and peaceful way of doing it. I always found that when you have stage one, stage two, stage three, that people start saying, I can only get to stage two, I can't get to stage three. And you can see that they're wanting to make progress instead of just allowing to make ingress. It's not what you do, it's just what happens when you just don't get involved. The lake becomes very still. And these things just occur. You find it's quite a skillful way of describing it, that's all. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, just a follow-up. I find that even when you're doing, say, the scanning, the breath comes along.
Yeah.
So it's very early. So if you take it up, it'll bypass the present moment and it'll go into the breath. But you always find, there's trailing thoughts coming with it.
Okay, yeah. That's one of the problems there. If you can just go straight into the breath, or I often say straight into nimittas, that's incredibly fine. You just don't need to do all the beginning part of meditation, you just close the eyes and beautiful light comes in the mind, it's simple. You don't need to think, you don't have past or future. Just go straight in there. But I mean, that's, you get the understanding of what this path is, going inside. And if you do go too fast, again, that's when you do get thoughts, or the mind just starts to get sleepy, or the mind just goes off somewhere else where it shouldn't be. But if you do it properly, then you can actually bypass a lot. But don't do that because, you know, you're on the fast track. Sometimes you have to have that patience and humility and just, okay, let's make sure my body is very comfortable first of all. That's why I like doing the body contemplation at the beginning. It builds up the mindfulness and the kindness. Maybe I build it up too much, but certainly when I let go of the body and go into the mind and peace, it's very stable. Okay, I've got five questions here from Indonesia. Could you describe the getting in that you mentioned in meditation? Because I can't feel that kind of feeling, but more like out of the body. Thank you, and please chanting bless us. Yeah, it's getting in, just using that simile of the body, is when the body is very, very peaceful. It's like the peace, it's actually inside. I prefer that perception of being outside of the body, looking at other things, or being outside looking at my body as if from an external position. Because I want the body to just sort of vanish and disappear, and the best way, place to have it vanish is from within. It was a good question, because so often people say that when they're meditating, the body can feel energy going through it, or sometimes pleasant energy, but that's still in the body. The body awareness is still there. And I always find the best metaphor is like going into it, inside of it. And when you are inside the body, getting into it is just, you know, you experience yourself with the body is just not really there. You can't be aware of it. You're sort of go to a place, but the body is not present for you. The breath may be present, peace is, the bliss is, but then the body is just not there. If somebody would touch you, sometimes in those deep meditations, somebody would touch you on the shoulder, you wouldn't feel it. So that's what I mean by getting inside. And you are inside in this stage where you can just, and again, feel things like peace, or you can maybe feel the breath. You're in the breath, you are the breath, and that's all there is. You're not watching the breath from outside, you are the in-breath, you are the out-breath, that's all there is. And that usually that gets so deep, you just, one breath at a time, you're just part of the in-breath, and the out-breath doesn't make any sense to you. We're just part in this part of the in-breath. If mindfulness gets very focused, you don't focus it, it just does it by itself. And you get very one-pointed in this moment. Anyway, our next question from France. My heart and mind are in turmoil because my cat, my only life companion, is sick. How can I help her and help myself? Meditation is hard these days. I do the compassion, the kindness. Remember, just some cats can be very sensitive to people's spiritual peace and well-being. And if you are not peaceful, that doesn't help the cat at all. It creates turmoil for the cat. So if you can make yourself peaceful, really relax to the max, and use that as a gift to your cat. If the cat needs attention, of course, you know, you shouldn't meditate. But if your cat is, you know, just sitting there, laying there, is comfortable, maybe on some medication, and if you can sort of be peaceful. Now honestly, sometimes it's amazing what you can do in a very peaceful mind to zap people with loving kindness. So remember, your heart and mind don't need to be in turmoil. That's not an expression of care. It's an expression of just a little bit of grief, a little bit of wanting. See if you can let that one go. Ajahn, how to do metta without force? I don't know how you can do metta with force. You just look at somebody and get this beautiful kindness, this love. Force, I don't know, that doesn't make sense to me. I can do normal meditation, relax it without controlling it, but every time I do metta I just feel like I'm doing something. Okay. If you are lighting a fire, I use that simile already, yes, you have to do something to light a fire. Once the fire is lit, it's hardly any effort. From Thailand, can you please tell us how to overcome excessive procrastination? I'll think about that and tell you tomorrow. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. You know, sometimes, you know, we can be so critical of ourselves and others, and procrastination, sometimes you don't need to make a decision. And, you know, I've often said that in one of my quotes, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. That's wisdom. It's not procrastination. You look, go home, see how many clean dishes are on the shelves, how many dirty dishes need to be washed up and cleaned. And if there's more clean dishes than there are dirty dishes, quit while you're ahead. Why do people always need to have everything clean and everything done and everything finished, and they don't have any peace in their lives? And that other little saying from, this was from Venerable Buddhadasa, he was saying that when his hall was still under construction, Range Retreat started, sent all his builders home, when people said, you know, when are you going to finish building your hall? And he would say, it is finished. What's done is finished. So you could have 3 months of nice peace and quiet. Otherwise, when can you ever find any peace? It's a nice thing to tell your boss when you go to work. He said, when are you going to finish that report? Tell me, it is finished. I said, well, why is it not on my desk? Because what's done is finished. I can put that on your desk, but it's not complete yet. Or the kids, tell your teacher at school, when are you going to finish that, your homework? What's done is finished. That happened to me when I first told that story here. It was this Sri Lankan family, they came to see me on Sunday. And they complained. He said, you know that story you told about what's done is finished? Well, our boy, our son, he was supposed to do his homework on Saturday night. We heard the talk. And on Saturday night, he was going out with his friends, partying. And we asked him, have you done your homework yet? Because he promised to do his homework before he'd go out. And the son, as he was going out, said, Mum, Dad, just as Ajahn Brahm said, what's done is finished. See you tomorrow. The parents complained. No, I think that's fine. Lastly, from Singapore, is it appropriate to say we ourselves invite thoughts by paying inappropriate attention? Yeah, sort of. Because it's not that do we pay inappropriate attention, because we're not satisfied. It's similar to when I used to go home after teaching at the school when I was still working, before I was a monk. And sometimes you go and you were so tired or bored or whatever, you just go and see what was on the TV, didn't matter what it was. You know, you go surfing on the TV or go to the refrigerator and see if there's anything to eat. I wasn't hungry. I was just looking for something to distract myself. So those are the times you do invite thoughts. Sometimes you're not satisfied right now, you're not happy. So what am I going to do? So any thought would do. Stupid thoughts, ridiculous thoughts. Because it was something to entertain myself. Entertainment is distraction. When you're at peace, you don't need entertainment. So what entertainment do monks get? We don't have a TV in my hut, no TV in my cave. What entertainment do we get? Closing your eyes and blissing out in meditation. Can't beat that. Okay, it's the same channel, but it's the same experience all the time, but it's pretty neat. Okay, any other questions before we finish off? Okay. Oh. Okay, come on then. Okay. Oh, is there a Be Quiet or Kalyanamitta or...
KFS.
KFC.
Kalyana Friendship Soup.
Oh, soup again.
There's soup in the kitchen if anyone okay. would like some soup. And the Kalyana Friendship Community is on at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
It's all ages and everyone's welcome. And we always have fun.
Okay.
Here you go, sold.
And what is the flavour of the soup today?
Pumpkin.
Pumpkin again?
Again?
I don't get any because it's too late for me. But anyway.
It's easy.
Yeah, okay. Yes, we're doing sutra at 3 o'clock. It's called Nalakapana Sutra. It's about the five hindrances. and about how important it is to overcome them. It's a simple sutta, but it's a powerful one in its meaning. Like, well, you can look at it beforehand if you wish, but also that we have it on a screen here, so you don't need to bring any books, it's all up there for you to see anyhow. Nalakapada, it's in the middle length sayings. Okay, so we can now just pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we could just do what we need to do. In other words, have some soup. It's very kind of soup.